Business, Transportation, and Workforce Development for Monday, the 30th of April. We have a couple more Senate bills to consider on our last day. And we'll begin by opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 17. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 17, and before I forget to tell you, it does have a subsequent referral to the Finance and Revenue Committee. It modifies the notice and payment provisions required when landlords close manufactured home parks for conversion to other uses. The bill would require at least a 365-day notice period and payment to residents of an increasing amount depending on the size of the home, from $5,000 for a single wide to $9,000 for a triple wide or larger. It would require a 180-day notice if the park is being converted into a manufactured home subdivision, and would not require the payment to tenants who buy, or the payment previously mentioned to tenants who buy or sell their lots. It does specify that the amounts will be adjusted for inflation and that the payment to the tenants is not taxable income. There is a disallowance of rental increases during the notice period, and a specification that residents will not be charged rent after leaving early and will not be charged for abandoning the home. There is an existing law, a $10,000 tax credit for residents, and a capital gains exemption for landlords who sell to entities that preserve the park. Those would be extended until 2012. They currently sunset in 2008. Another provision of the bill would be freezing the assessed valuation of the parkland for 5 years after closure. And a very important provision is that the local ordinances would not be able to be applied to park closures so they're preempted if the closure notice is given on or after the effective date of the measure. This measure would take effect 91 days after adjournment of the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's some information about current law and the staff measure summary, and we'll pass out a section-by-section analysis of the bill that John Van Landing has prepared. Thank you.
All right, let's begin by asking Senator Avakian and Representative Krummel to come forward.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to specify that I was talking about the Dash 3 amendments.
Yes.
And there's also a Dash 2 amendment at your place, and it clarifies that the notice and payment requirements for landlords in the measure do not constitute a regulatory taking for purposes of Measure 37 provisions.
Okay. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Krummel, House District 26, Wilsonville, Sherwood, over to Gaston, including Bull Mountain. And Senator Avakian has told me to go ahead, so I'll take that prerogative if that's all right with you. And then,
first time he's ever done anything I said to do, but that's all right. Take advantage of that.
But he keeps trying. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 17 this afternoon. The Manufactured Housing Landlord-Tenant Coalition, I think, deserves a lot of credit for negotiating for many months during the interim to put this entire package together. For some, it goes too far. For others, it doesn't go far enough. And because of that, it probably means that it's just about right. I think that this is a good example of what we can do in the interim is to hash out differences that are out there on controversial issues and then try to bring a compromise plan to the legislature. I don't want to focus too much on the coalition plan here today because there's a lot of other folks that are going to do that, but I think that it is a well-balanced plan in spite of what you'll hear from some of the other testimony. Because in the end, I think what we all really care about is affordable housing. And it's an issue that both the public and private sector need to consider as a priority for our quality of life here in Oregon. Just a quick look at the numbers, Mr. Chair. There have been 65 park closures impacting approximately 2,500 spaces since 1990. 31 of those closures have occurred in just the past 2 years, taking 1,500 spaces off the map. There are still 1,300 parks scattered across Oregon, housing 67,000 residents. To just give you a little bit of perspective, I lived in a mobile home park for many years and helped my elderly mother when she moved from one park to another. So I have set up a house, and I've also moved a house. And so I see this issue from a personal perspective. As many of you know, Thunderbird Park, which is in the heart of Wilsonville, got word on February 14th that it was going to be closing. But before that, in June of 2005, there was kind of these rumblings. And so we pushed through House Bill 2890. I can't remember the number now. But anyway, to create the tax credits and many of the things that you see before you today in Senate Bill 17. So what I'd like to just mention briefly is the new and improved tax credit program. It continues the current tax credit, which will expire or sunset at the end of this calendar year. It becomes universal, so there's no longer any limits on income. It also becomes refundable for anyone, and it also continues the capital gains tax break for park owners who sell their land to the owners of the homes, which is something that we really want to encourage to have happen. On just a final note, tomorrow afternoon I'm going to be attending a resource fair for the residents at Thunderbird who are being forced out of the park. I'm hoping that I can bring with me some good news about Senate Bill 17. If we don't adopt the package of legislation this session, then I'm afraid that they will get very little help. I'm also, if we don't adopt Senate Bill 17 as a package and we start taking pieces out, I'm very afraid that it starts to implode and that we don't get anything through this session. And I think that would be a real travesty with where we started in 2005 and with what we were able to accomplish at the end of the session. The folks in Thunderbird, for example, if they move before the end of the year, they might get the current tax credit, but there wouldn't be anything, any other assistance for them. And these are folks that really need our assistance. So with that, I'll end. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I definitely want to make sure that Senator Avakian speaks, and then I'll leave so the rest of the city can hear what the real people have to say.
Thank you, Representative. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Senator Brad Avakian, District 17, Washington and Multnomah Counties. I appreciate you and the committee very much hearing this bill. And rather than go through the particulars of the bill, because many people coming after us will do that for you, I just wanted to briefly tell you why I am so appreciative of you hearing this bill. It's been several sessions in a row, at least, where bills similar to this have been proposed. Very few have ever gotten a hearing, and those that have all failed, with the exception of Representative Krummel's tax credit bill last session. And in the time that those bills have been presented and failed, speaking only of my part of the state in the Washington County portion of my district, hundreds of people have lost their homes. It's bad enough when somebody who lives in an apartment loses their home and needs to go somewhere else. But what is unique about this population of homeowners is that when they lose the place that they live in, they carry a large amount of debt, many of them, as they're trying to transition somewhere else. They don't have enough money to pay off what might be remaining on the mortgage. They don't have enough money to spend $15,000 or so to move the home that they have somewhere else. And the whole notion of them having an option to stay where they are is oftentimes taken away from them. So they are in a very unique and difficult place when the rug gets pulled out from underneath them. The failure of this legislature to give some aid to the people in this position over the last several sessions has left hundreds of these folks in my part of the state with nowhere else to turn. Looking from this day forward, we can see that there are a number of other parks that are looking towards closure. Some people even think that maybe we're looking at the extinction of this type of living, and that you will see thousands of people across the state in the next decade that end up without a place to live and without the means to take care of themselves in transition housing, which means we have just absolutely got to act this session, and I appreciate the committee looking at the bills seriously. You will have various amendments proposed on this bill. You've got efforts going on in the House that will be helpful to folks as well. Not everybody in the room agrees how best to help the people in this situation, but I urge you to help in some way pass a bill out and get it to the floor for a vote. With that, I appreciate the committee's time very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Both of you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll begin. Let's ask Mr. Van Landingham, Ms. Schwach, and Mr. Carpenter to come forward. Can I give us the outline of the coalition's efforts here? Welcome. Whoever would like to begin, please.
You want me to go first? Girls first?
Sure.
Okay. It's girls first. Chair Metzger and committee, thank you very much for hearing our plea today. As I look at this committee, I realize that some of you on this committee have been around almost as long as the members of the Landlord-Tenant Coalition. Senator George and Senator Starr, both
of us are
way back.
Pat, would you please give us your name for the record?
Pat Schwach, Manufactured Homeowners. I'm executive director.
Yeah, thank you.
For those of you we've not testified in front of, we used to make Saturday night wrestling look pale. Nobody trusted anyone who was not on our side, and we soon discovered, however, that if we didn't gain a thing for either of us because the legislators were sick and tired of our crying and complaining. So long story short, we got smart and started working together. The attached brochure shows what we have negotiated for the benefit of park residents. These are issues that were sorely needed and have resulted in communities where we enjoy living among friends and neighbors who have mutual interests, share similar life experiences, keep an eye out for our neighbor in case they are in trouble, and in general, live comfortably. That was not always the case. We're now faced with a different problem. 2 years ago, it became apparent that there were problems developing over park closures. With Representative Crummell leading the way, we came up with a stopgap measure, which offered some benefits. At the close of that session, we pulled our coalition together, and the legislation, which is before you as a result of the compromise, some 20 months later. You and the legislature know all too well that legislation is seldom produced without compromise. We spent 18 months working at the compromise, which we all live with. Is it perfect? No. We all have some ideas we'd like to have included, but we're intelligent enough to know that it is impossible to find a perfect solution that we could all buy into. I'm not going to go into the details of this issue because John's much more prepared to do that than I. I just urge you to pass this bill and get some relief to these folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat. Mr. Van Landingham.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Van Landingham. I work as a lawyer for Lane County Legal Aid and Advocacy Center in Eugene. I'm testifying on behalf of the Manufactured Housing Landlord-Tenant Coalition, of which I am the facilitator. And I'm here to explain and support Senate Bill 17 with the -3 amendments. Janet is handing out to you a collated package of handouts from me, and I'll try to work through those in some organized fashion, although I'm not going to read them. As Pat indicated, this coalition has been around for a while. There are two landlord-tenant coalitions, one that does apartment law and one that does manufactured housing park law. I've got dragged into this one kicking and screaming, but I'm in it now and committed to it. Since 1997, we have produced five, in each of the last five sessions, an omnibus negotiated package which compromises and changes the law in ways that Pat and I think help tenants and in ways John Carpenter hopes it helps park landlords. We try to pull things over Chuck's eyes and get away with things. And I would note that in the past, the coalition has been accused of being dominated by legal aid, as opposed to the current accusation that we're dominated by landlords. The coalition began meeting on park closures in August of 2005. So that's more than a year ago, 18 months, meeting once a month, 3 hours each meeting, sometimes more, twice a month, to try to figure out something that we could agree on to recommend to you all. Our experience in the past is that neither side is going to succeed in the legislature unless we reach agreement and produce something. It's what Pat referred to as the Saturday night fights before we started working as a coalition. That is literally true. We don't get everything that we want. We give up some things that we might not want to give up as tenants. But as a whole, we think the package that we agree to is important. And we're committed to the package. We're worried that if you change the package, then we get opposition. Coalition falls apart, the bill gets opposed, maybe nothing happens this session about park closures, and certainly the coalition won't be able to negotiate in the future. And there are significant remaining issues that we have on our work plan that we would like to keep working on. I have the second thing that I gave you, or the backside of that first page, is a list of the coalition members in case you want to see who actually is active in it. I do an email list for the coalition that has more than 50 names, including names of people who are opposed to this bill. So they get the documents that I draft. And we do drafts. We went through more than 20 drafts of the park closure proposal that is now Senate Bill 17. And we route those to the world. But those are the people who actually come to the meetings and work on the proposal. The next document that I want to cover, because I think it's important to you understand where this fits into the park closure issue. I've been telling people there's sort of two prongs here. One is the prong of trying to save some parks from closing. The other prong is we're going to lose some parks, and those parks, the tenants are going to be displaced, and our job is to try to help those tenants, because being displaced is a significant blow to the tenants. It's going to cost them a bunch of money to move, and some of them are not going to be able to find a home or be able to move their manufactured home. So this bill, Senate Bill 17, is addressed at that latter situation where we're not going to be able to save a park from closing. We can't force a landlord to not close. We can't force a landlord legally to sell to the residents or a nonprofit. We can compete. There are a couple of bills that we think will facilitate competition by preferred buyers, nonprofits, housing authorities, resident co-ops, to try to buy parks and preserve them as affordable housing. One of those is HB 2096, which creates a new nonprofit manufactured dwelling park co-op. It's passed the House. It's now to the Senate. Another one is Senate Bill 38, which would raise the document recording fee. It's now been reintroduced in the House as 3551. Some of that money that it would generate would be used to help buy parks by nonprofits or resident co-ops. Senate Bill 984, which this committee has already reviewed and passed out, would increase or allow the use of the existing Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit to be used for park purchases. So we've got a number of concepts that we're pursuing that we hope will facilitate park purchase by resident co-ops and by nonprofits. This bill does also include one thing that would help with that, and that is it would continue from Representative Krummel's 2005 bill, 2389, a capital gains break for landlords who sell to those preferred purchasers. So that's the bigger picture. Let me talk about what's actually in this bill, Senate Bill 17. And I'm not going to do the longer section-by-section summary, which is 5 pages long, because I assume that you don't want to hear that. But so let me just highlight what I think is important about the bill. So it's something that's titled Manufactured Housing Landlord-Tenant Coalition Outline of Elements.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, this is all -3 amendments?
Correct.
Okay, great.
Senator George, yes, that's correct.
Sorry about that.
We're here. The -3 amendments implement the coalition's agreement. We had some trouble getting to that point with mistakes by legislative council or misunderstandings by legislative council of what we intend. The -3 amendments do what we want as a coalition. First note for you that under the current law, and this has been the law, this has been the case since the state first regulated manufactured housing park tenancies in 1975, landlords have always been allowed to close parks and displace the residents. This is not a new right that they have. Landlords have always had that right. And in fact, the current law requires landlords in their rental agreements to warn tenants of that a park could close. The law requires a closing landlord to give a one-year notice and no money. If the landlord wants to give less than 1 year notice, the landlord has to give at least 180 days, pay $3,500, a figure that was set in 1989, and find an available alternative space for the tenant to move to, which would be difficult. No landlords use the latter. Landlords who close parks use a 1 year notice with no financial assistance to the tenants who are displaced. That's the current law. So if this bill doesn't pass or some other bill doesn't pass, that will continue to be the current law. What this bill would do would be to say only the 365-day notice. You can't use the 180-day notice, the short notice. Landlords have to pay each displaced tenant $5,000 for a single wide, $7,000 for a double wide, $9,000 for triple wide or larger. Those payments would be up front. In other words, they'd be paid. Half of it would be paid when the tenant notifies the landlord that he or she is moving out. Half of it will be paid when the tenant actually moves out. That's important because the tax credit money that we that's in this package, it was in the 2005 bill, is something you get retroactively. You move out now, you file your tax return next year, you get the credit then. You won't have that money in your hand to help you move. This money from the landlord would be available to help you move. Those payments are to be adjusted annually by HCS to reflect CPI increases. They're not to be treated as taxable income to the resident. There's no rent obligation on the tenant if the tenant leaves early during that one-year period. Our experience is that as soon as tenants get notice of a park closure, they panic and try to get out as fast as they can. They're not going to stay there. Many of them are not going to stay there during that 1 year. They're going to try and get out. So there's no rent obligation if the tenant leaves early, which otherwise under Oregon law, they would have a rent obligation for the whatever the term of their rental agreement is. There's no charge to the tenant if the tenant abandons the manufactured home. In a lot of the closures where the parks are older and the homes are older, those homes can't withstand a move or they're not worth moving. If it costs you $15,000 to move it and your home's worth five, you probably wouldn't move it. So in many of those cases, the tenants simply abandon the home in the park. It costs the landlord between $2,000 and $4,000 to dispose of that home, to pay to have it hauled off and demolished. This bill would say the landlord cannot charge the tenant for that cost. Under current law, the landlord can't. It's abandoned property. The landlord can make the tenant pay for that. And then no rent increase during the one-year period. Eight and nine on that list are continuations of the Representative Crummell bill from 2005, HB 2389, the tax credit, the $10,000 tax credit for residents who are displaced. It has a sunset at the end of this year. We want to remove the sunset. We want to make it universal. Right now it's limited by income. And we want to make it available whether you move or not. Right now you only get it if you move your home. And as I said a minute ago, a lot of people can't move their homes and so can't get the tax credit. The ninth point is the capital gains break that I mentioned earlier. If landlords sell their park to the residents or to a nonprofit. The tenth point is that we would clarify the law about park closures, make sure that that's, they're actually being closed to convert to another use, clean everybody out and keep operating as a park. And copies of notices would go to Housing Community Services. The 11th point is that there is a five-year freeze on the assessed value of the park from the time of closure. Our concept there was that it would in part reimburse landlords for the payments they're making to tenants. The freeze, the first couple years of that five-year period, our view is that land will not be worth anything. It would be during the development, so the landlord's probably losing money in the first 2 years. The third, fourth, and fifth years, the landlord would save some money. It's a freeze, not a waiver, so the landlord would continue to pay the assessed value now, as it is as a park, but would not pay the higher assessed value as redevelopment. It's somewhat like tax increment financing in which you're going to get an investment. The local government's going to have a much higher tax base after the park is redeveloped. The 12th point is the preemption of local ordinances for any notices given after, closure notices given after the effective date of the bill. That obviously has created a lot of concern by some cities. There are four cities that currently have ordinances that would be preempted by this language. Those cities are Wilsonville, Bend, Oregon City, which all have the same, roughly the same ordinance, and Eugene. Eugene's ordinance was adopted in 89. I helped to write it. It doesn't really do very much, but there is a proposal to update Eugene's ordinance, which would make it better than 2735, excuse me, better than Senate Bill 17. The next point is that we would prohibit local governments, or this is an expansion on an existing prohibition that was also in the Crummell Bill from 2005, would not allow local governments to restrict the placement of a displaced manufactured home on a legal lot just because of its age. So if a park closes and a home wants to move to a lot that's a legal lot, the local government couldn't prohibit that just because of the age of the home. And then the last point is that there are a number of other issues that are included in the bill, although not getting much attention, that do sort of the usual coalition work of trying to upgrade and improve manufactured housing landlord-tenant law. I'll stop there. If there are questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
I think we'll go to Mr. Carpenter first, and then we'll see if there's questions here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chuck Carpenter. I'm the Executive Director of Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon, and we represent about 500 manufactured home communities in the state of Oregon. I'd like to express my appreciation to John Van Landingham for all the hard work he has put into this coalition. This is my fourth session that I've sat up here with Pat and John to testify on the coalition bill, and I think over the years we've put together some pretty good compromises. This is by far the most difficult compromise for the owners of manufactured home communities to reach, but I think we've reached a fair agreement here with the compensation. This is a very, very difficult issue for everybody involved, for the owners of the homes, for the owners of the communities. It is a very gut-wrenching experience to see the communities close. One of the things we set out to do 18 months ago, almost 2 years ago now, when we started talking about the park closure issue, was the acknowledgement that there needed to be stability in the marketplace. Manufactured home communities will continue to be part of the housing mix in Oregon for the foreseeable future. There may be communities closing inside urban growth boundaries, but particularly for those of you representing Washington County, you may remember that when light rail was put in, the whole argument was we needed to build density, and manufactured home communities do not fit into that paradigm. There are in communities where you have 200 spaces, we're now able or needing to put in 800 housing units in order to meet the demands of light rail and the density. But one of the things we set out to do with this was to bring some confidence to the marketplace and to find a solution that helps people move on to the next phase of their housing choice, preserves what's left of the manufactured housing industry, so that people have confidence to be able to move into communities, into viable communities, and there will continue to be many of them throughout the state of Oregon. But to give them the confidence that they can move into these communities, and that if that community should close sometime into the future, whether it's 5, 10, 15 years from now, that there will be a mechanism for them to move on to the next housing choice. These are very difficult issues. I think we reached a very good compromise. And again, I appreciate the support and dedication that John Van Landingham has shown in pulling the coalition together. Pat has been wonderful to work with. I think we've come up with a very good compromise that will preserve manufactured housing as an alternative type of housing for many, many people in the state, but also address the needs of those who happen to live in communities, which are few when you consider that there are almost 1,200 communities in the state of Oregon that are closing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. I got a couple questions. First of all, does anybody want to address the Dash 2 amendment? John, do you want
to? John Van Landingham. Chair Metzger, what the Dash 2 amendment does is say that Section 2, subsection 5 of the bill would not be treated as a land use regulation for purposes of Measure 37. That subsection is a small part of the bill. It is a subsection that says a landlord can't raise the rent during the one-year closure period. In my volunteer life, I pay a fair amount of attention to Measure 37 as the chair of LCDC. I don't know. I guess the short answer would be I would prefer that you not do the Dash 2 amendment, and I can explain why if you want me to go into greater detail.
Okay.
Let me do that. I'm afraid that anything that mentions Measure 37 is going to draw more opposition to a bill that already has a tough row to hoe. One. Two, exempting that one subsection doesn't really do much. And in fact, it suggests that the whole rest of the bill is a land use regulation covered by Measure 37. Three, I don't think any of us in the state know what, for sure, with apologies to OIA, I don't think, well, maybe I should say this less broadly, many of us don't know exactly what Measure 37 covers. I have gone back and forth as to whether Measure 37 would cover this bill or even the entire Oregon Residential Landlord Tenant Act. Is it a Measure 37 claim that state law requires a landlord to provide heat? It is a land use. It is a regulation on the use of land, and it may well. I had hoped in my dream of dreams that the Measure 37 fixed bill might save us from having to deal with it. It will not. It won't get to that level. I've looked at the summary of the Measure 37 fixed, assuming it passes and is referred to the voters. I think it would probably help make clear that this stuff is not covered. I know I'm not giving you a simple answer, but I don't think, if I were a senator, I don't think I would want to do the Dash 2s.
Okay. Thank you for your expertise on that. Another thing, we're going to have some other testimony, but I kind of want to cut to the chase a little bit here for members of the committee. We have The coalition also brought this bill before the House, and it is moving through the House. And my understanding is perhaps the key reason that our committee is hearing the bill here is that the House broke down over the issue of preemption.
Correct.
As to whether the other, the four cities that you mentioned, that their ordinances should be allowed to stand, or whether the whole tenant-landlord agreement for the whole state could be put at risk of going kaput if you did. And that's kind of why we're here today, is to have a different set of eyes look at whether we should go with the coalition group or roll the dice with the exemption. Is that pretty much why we're here today?
Chair Metzger, that's correct.
Okay.
The House Consumer Protection Committee passed HB 2735, which differs from Senate Bill 17 in some small regards. We've made some additional amendments to Senate Bill 17 to fix things that should have been fixed on the House side. But the main difference between the two bills is that HB 2735, as amended by that committee, grandfathers in any city or county that has a local ordinance on park closure that is both adopted and in effect prior to the effective date of the bill, which is roughly October 1, 91 days after Sonny died.
Okay.
So that's the main difference between 2735 and 17. Why are we here asking you to do 17? The coalition is committed to the agreement that we made. We will try to defend that agreement. We're worried that if it becomes a fight over that no bill may pass. The House committee vote was 4-3. We're obviously very worried that there won't be a bill that comes out of the session on park closures, and we would much prefer this bill than no bill. And secondly, we're worried about what this means for the future ability of the coalition to exist and negotiate agreements.
Thank you for your candor. Question, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I really appreciate, obviously, your comments, and I got to raise this, though. I mean, one of the big reasons why we're even here is state policy decision dealing with land use, which restricts the value of land, which puts the owners of the property in a unique position of they've got really little choice except to convert the use into the state policy decision, which is a high-density housing use. So we have state policy on one side coming out of an agency which is encouraging the property owners to convert these mobile home parks into high-density development or some other higher and better use. At some point, this is a Band-Aid, which it's going to be tough to swallow no matter what we do, but I understand it's a compromise. At what point are we going to deal with the underlying policy decision at state agency level on the land use planning side to say how we're going to deal with making sure we have parks into the future that's a reasonable amount of money that people can actually live in these parks, or are we just saying parks in the future are parks are not an option that we want in the state?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, another Senator George asked me a similar question last week in testimony on a different bill related to this overall global picture. I wanted to say a couple things. One, park closures are a national phenomenon. They're not just in Oregon. And they're happening in places that don't have land use planning, such as Las Vegas, Virginia, Idaho. Two, I believe that you are right, though, that our land use system does make land inside urban growth boundaries cost more than otherwise. We're in the system, even if you took UGBs away and added a bunch of land, as Metro has demonstrated for us, the land is still going to be worth a ton of money. And I think it's worth a ton of money because a lot of people want to live in this great state. And unless we become a crummy state, that's going to be the case always. Three, Senate Bill 187 is a bill submitted by LCDC and DLCD, which proposed to make it easier and quicker to expand UGBs for affordable land dedicated to affordable housing, including new manufactured home parks, an idea that is consistent, I think, with what you're suggesting. We had a hearing. We had a lot of opposition. It's not going to move this session, although we've had some last-minute negotiations trying to talk about doing it as a trial in a couple of cities to see how it works. I don't know that that's going to happen, but we will. If I'm still on LCDC, we'll be back in the next session to see. Folks used to say it takes three sessions for an idea to get through the legislature. Four, you're going to get the Big Look report, I hope, in 09, and that's going to suggest a lot of changes, possibly, to the whole system.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Stark?
Well, actually, Mr. Van Landen, him answered the question that I was going to because I was going to ask him. My question, quite honestly, was the same as Senator George's. We created the problem through state legislative activity, for regulatory activity, and it's this bill and a bunch of other bills that are trying to put a Band-Aid on the problem. But the issue that I wanted to further flesh out is the issue that Mr. Van Landingham hit on, that manufactured home parks are closing throughout the country. And I think that the communities that you mentioned are communities where, you know, folks want to move to live.
Correct.
And, you know, land demands are high in those communities, regardless of whether they have land use policies or not. But so that was an issue that I wanted to highlight. You know, there's a lot about this bill that I don't like at all. I think that it's frustrating to have to be in a position to make a choice that's sitting in front of us.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
What you're saying is extremely interesting, and all of us would really like to hear it.
My thought is that I think you just have to speak up louder. So we'll ask people to be project more, because the system itself doesn't change. So we'll ask people to speak up as clearly as they can. Let's see what we can do here. Let's ask, are the Mitchells, are you together? Could I have one of you come up? I just got a lot of people testifying. If I can have one of the Mitchells please come forward, and Mr. Davis and Mr. Ferris come up. And I'll try to get to as many as I can before we have to close down this section.
May I submit my written testimony?
Yes, sir, you may. Please do. We never like to start.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Barbara Mitchell. I reside at 3355 North Delta, number 45, Lakeridge Park in Eugene. From a homeowner's perspective, I will focus on three of the issues we have with Senate Bill 17, as with its identical House Bill 2735. And, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that you brought up mention of House Bill 2735, because unless I'm losing my hearing, I didn't hear the first five speakers mention that there's a House Bill. This House Bill has had two lengthy hearings, March 2nd and April 2nd, and two work sessions, April 23rd, the afternoon, and again in the evening, where it was amended and voted out, do pass. And I urge you to follow an orderly legislative process of moving the House bill forward. My information is that a House bill has been before the Democratic caucus in the House three times for discussion, and that the amendment on the preemption clause that the committee, House Consumer Protection Committee, voted out is approved by the caucus, that the votes for the floor vote should be there. So we were surprised that this Senate bill came up for hearing before the House bill. It's referred to House Revenue and then do pass to the House floor. I'll hit my three points very briefly, because you do have a lot of people to testify. First, we oppose the state preemption of local laws on park closure. We adamantly oppose the state preemption that would wipe out the good work accomplished in Eugene, where I'm from, Bend, Wilsonville, and Oregon City. We believe other communities also should have the opportunity to enact local ordinances in tune with their local issues. One size does not fit all. We urge deletion of the preemption sections 4 and 5 of Senate Bill 17. And as a compromise, we support the revised language amended into House Bill 2735 that the House Committee passed out Monday night. And attached to my amendment testimony are the amendments proposed to Senate Bill 17. The first one is word for word the amendment that's now in House Bill 2735. This is the compromise. And with first section 4 sub 2 as rewritten, requires a local ordinance to provide equal or greater rights than provided in sections 2 and 3 of the bill. Secondly, section 5 sub 1 provides what we understood is a short window of opportunity for local governments to pass or amend ordinances until the effective date of the bill, the 91st day after sine die, presumably about October 1. Our second point, enact protections when homes cannot be moved. In Eugene, a study showed only 80 vacant spaces, many of them single wide spaces. Well, in our park, Lake Ridge has 192 spaces of double and triple wide. We're threatened that a hospital is going to relocate on a golf course right across from us, and that our park would, the land would become so valuable that the owner would sell the land and evict us. We would have no place to move our homes for a similar community life. We seniors stand to lose the homes that often are our major asset in retirement. So we urge addition of language to Section 2 to cover payment for homes that cannot be moved. The last point, number 3, assist residents to purchase parks. Printed Senate Bill 17 had 60 days rather than 14 days to allow resident associations to express interest in purchasing parks. In your dash 3 amendments, that has been dropped. So we aren't going to make any headway on that unless this bill would amend as the amendments show, ORS 90.820, to increase it to 90 days. And we also would like some seed money to put into the existing revolving loan fund in the state housing department. It's already there, but it doesn't have much money in it. That helps us purchase our parks. And this would preserve affordable housing in our communities. So I urge you to, your committee, to table Senate Bill 17 today. Let the House bill move through. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
My name is Peter Ferris. I'm a lobbyist for a new organization called the Oregon Manufactured Homeowners United. Our group is essentially a group that arose out of many of the cities that have passed and want to pass ordinances. I would like to start off with to talk about the composition of the coalition, and I know this very well. I spent 8 months with the coalition, beginning with this whole process of putting together this closure bill, and during that time, I was the only other tenant being representing tenants in that association. Pat Schwach and I were the only two. We have 13 owner-related folks. We have staff people. To my mind, this doesn't really represent a coalition. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and what a coalition really is an alliance of factions that come together to make a compromise. And to my way of thinking, given my experience, there wasn't a give and take. There wasn't a real compromise coming out of this committee. And not everybody was at the table. And the proof of the pudding, and you can choose to decide what you want, but the proof of the pudding here are three aspects of this bill. One is preemption, and it's been covered pretty well already. But essentially, my understanding of the amendment that was passed in the House is that the preemption not only grandfathers the four cities that have done so, but also would allow a window of opportunity for any other city to pass an ordinance, but it would be under a very tight schedule. Now, many of the cities have not passed ordinances. simply because threats of lawsuits. Wilsonville knows this well. So I would again say this represents a real compromise. Not all cities will do this, no question about it. But it seems to me that local control is important here. The second proof of the pudding about this as being an owner's bill is the five-year tax evaluation freeze. Now, this is really welfare for the owners and the developers. This makes no sense to me. They're making big bucks in this process, and they expect the taxpayers to pick up the bill. I've included Washington County Board of the Commissioner's letter, and because I know they weren't coming today, I included it, and they were unanimously against 2735, and they were also against this five-year tax freeze. The third piece is the tax credits, which are now refundable. Now, I agree that tax credits are important, especially given the fact that the coalition, the owners, are unwilling to give very much in terms of compensation. In fact, again, the taxpayers are paying more for this package than the owners themselves. And if a large park like Thunderbird goes down, that represents $3 million. That's a lot of money. It could be better spent for a win-win situation. And by that I mean this. If we could use that money to provide a gap financing so that people could actually purchase parks, the resident associations and the nonprofits could do that. It's not going to happen all the time, but it should happen. We should preserve these things because ultimately the question is, are mobile home parks going to survive? You know, period. So, and I noticed that we had in the original 2735 bill 60 days given to offer residents to put a package together. Now that has been deleted out. The owners deleted that out, and we're back to a notice of only 14 days. We think we need 90 days for that. We think we want to be players. We can be players, and we can afford, we can then preserve some of these parks. I think really the issue here is fairness, and I would say to you that we need a real coalition. We need a real, and I agree that this bill is important. We're supporting the bill now, and I suspect that the coalition, the so-called coalition, is not going to support it anymore. They're going to ditch it. And I don't think that's, after 18 months, I just don't think that's the right thing to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Chairman, members of this committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Gary Davis. I live in Woodland Park Estates, 1699 North Terry in Eugene, Oregon. I fully support any legislation allowing mobile home park developers to take possession of homes and land from people who live in houses worth $300,000 or more. Developers would compensate them just $5,000 to $9,000 in order to build mobile home parks for poor senior citizens, veterans, and the disabled. Sound ridiculous? Then why is this committee considering Senate Bill 17, which does exactly the opposite? It allows park owners and developers to take away the home of poor senior citizens, veterans, and the disabled, among others, so houses can be built for the wealthy. Shame on you and shame to us. I adamantly oppose Senate Bill 17, as it does not compensate mobile home tenants for their potential moving expenses or loss of their home. The preemption clause further insults me by closing the door to any and all local governing bodies who may have a better solution or compensation package. It is no surprise to me, however, that wealthy land developers and mobile home park owners are doing this. America was built on taking land from the American Indians and then relocating them to reservations. I guess poor senior citizens, veterans, and the disabled are next. When they're through with us, whose homes will they go after next? Yours? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, folks. We're going to go for another 15 minutes or so here. Let's ask Jan Foster. And Jean, is it Bludell?
Bludier.
And Ike's Hensel to come forward. If you have written testimony, please submit it. Otherwise,
I don't have written.
Okay. Just give us a few minutes for each of your thoughts would be great. Welcome, sir. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, Chairman Metzger and committee. My name is Jan Foster. I'm the president of OSTA chapter in McNary Oaks Villas Estates in Kaiser, Space 28. This Bill 17, I believe, needs to stay intact. We need to put it forward, and we need to have something in place to protect our tenants in these mobile home parks. This bill begins towards supporting the Oregonians who have such a financial risk at stake as a homeowner in a mobile home park. Mobile home parks are comprised of fixed-income senior citizens, low-income families, physically and mentally impaired members, and single-parent families. All these Oregonians have predominantly low incomes with little to no disposable income for vacations, activities, and personal items of comfort and enjoyment. These people pay taxes, rent, utilities, and buy food and clothing from local merchants. They cannot afford to pay to have their homes demolished or moved. Under the law, most mobile homes are too old to be moved. And this is basically because of the high density requirement that the state of Oregon has in place. There are no new mobile home parks being built throughout the state. And so those that are leaving the parks that are being closed cannot find a place to put their mobile home if they so choose. Under the law, most mobile home parks they have not afforded to leave their landscaping, patios, awnings, and all the other amenities that they put into their space over the many years that they've lived there. If not for mobile home parks, a large portion of these families would be forced to live out of their cars or in your city streets. Can the state of Oregon, in good conscience, allow this to happen to residents, taxpayers, and voters? In fact, the mobile home industry is disappearing since there appears to be no healthy growth in the mobile home park on the horizon. The state of Oregon has not looked into what it needs to make this type of a living environment a thriving part of the state throughout their communities. The bill is a start to protect the tenant from the corporate money moguls that are buying up parks and turning them into condominium complexes or high-density single and multiple housing units. This is a moral and ethical issue that faces the state of Oregon, representatives. Do you support your citizens? Impose a monetary reimbursement for the tenants' homes on the park's owners. It seems apparent that park owners is interested in only improving their bottom line for their investors. Mobile home park owners in the past were satisfied with rental income that came each month. The new generation is looking at every aspect of potential profit-making investments, flipping homes, apartment conversions, and Prop 37, which is a nightmare, farmland developments into high-density housing communities, etc. It is time to do what's right for your citizens.
Thank you.
And my closing comment is, I'm a retired citizen. I've worked for over 35 years for the federal government. I'm in the golden years. And since I've been in this park, I've seen those that are also in the twilight of their years. And they need to have the confidence without the stress of knowing that their park can be closed. They need confidence in knowing that they can live the remaining time of their life in a home without having to worry about moving it or finding another place to live. It is paramount that you consider that. Would you do that to your parents? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Foster. Welcome.
Hi there, Senator Mensah and the committee. I thank you very much for having us. My name is Jean Blunier. I come from Greenway Manufactured Home over in Dallas, Oregon. I am the president of our OSTA chapter over there. Along with what my colleague has said here, many, many of our people would be out on the street there. We have a lot of elderly, 90-year-old, 80-year-old, 70-year-olds in there that have been there. We have some people that have been there for 30 years. We were invited into these parks. They started up about 30, 40 years ago, making them into a manufactured home park rather than a trailer park. We were invited in to invest, take a home in there, set it up. We not only paid fees for setting it up, we also had to pay for our landscaping, and we put a lot of work in that. And it's our home. It's not just a house. It's our home. Being that we've been there so many years, many of our homes cannot be moved either. We would be out on the street. We don't pay as much rent as we would if we went into a apartment. I don't even know how we would pay that kind of a rent if we were left out. I agree the amount of money that's being offered is nearly not enough. But we have to start somewhere. And I would like to take a saying that Michael J. Fox said just not too long ago on his part about the fact that he is raising money to help his ailment. And he said, you have to plant the tree before you can pick the apple. And with that, I would like to thank you very much.
Thank you both very much. Mayor Lehan, you want to come forward?
Can I bring my city attorney?
Yes, if it gives you comfort.
Oh, yes. In case I stumble, which I frequently do.
Welcome.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Charlotte Lehan. I'm the mayor of the city of Wilsonville, and we've kind of been at the center of this for the last 2 years. I want to make a couple of points. One is that, as has been said here before, the coalition was missing some major players, and I think the main one missing was local government. I compare it to the compromise and the negotiations. I compare it to Mike and I deciding we're going to negotiate who's going to pay for lunch, and we come to a compromise and decide it's going to be him, and he wasn't part of the discussion. And so we can pat ourselves on the back that it was wonderful for us, but that guy over there, he might think differently.
And I'll take you out to lunch anytime.
Be sure to report it.
And so the some of the big issues that you're hearing here, both the tax impacts, local tax impacts, and the preemption are the purview of cities that have been negotiated away without us at the table. We certainly support having a statewide ordinance for this. I think there isn't anyone in the room, at least that I've heard, who doesn't agree that something needs to be done. And while we could debate a number of points within this bill that I think could be done better, and I think our ordinance addresses better, the only one that I'm really here to speak to right now today is the preemption one. I don't think that we can decide that one size fits all across the whole state of Oregon, particularly in terms of a compensation amount, a dollar amount that you're going to put in statute for from here till whenever, that is supposed to work in communities like ours that have land values at $800,000 an acre, and other parts of the state where it's still only at $20,000 an acre. To set $1 amount that's going to be fair across the whole state of Oregon, I think just can't be done, and it isn't a rational compromise. The arguments that you've heard for preemption, there really are no arguments in favor of preemption that are in favor of it on its merits. The people who have said preemption is okay are, it's only on the basis of, well, the park owners require it, and we don't think we can get it passed unless it has preemption. Preempts local cities from addressing local, coming up with local solutions. There's otherwise no rational reason that local governments in this case shouldn't be able to craft solutions that work better at the local level. And I think they're much different in the Portland metro area than they are in Malheur County or any number of other places across the state. And I think that's all. I do have testimony which I submitted, and I think I emailed this morning. I'll just say I had a correction. I thought that the dash twos on 2735, I thought those were the ones that John Van Lanningham had supported, but apparently they were not. But in any event, I do support as a compromise to eliminating preemption altogether, which would be section 4 and 5. We agreed to the compromise on 2735 that would give that window of opportunity and grandfather in the four cities that have worked so hard at the ordinances that we have. And I don't know, my city attorney might clean up anything I've missed here.
Please make it brief if you do.
Thank you, Chair Metzger and members of the committee. Just a couple of things. Chair Metzger, you asked a question of Mr. Van Lanningham, I believe, about the amendment dash 2. And in case you're unaware of it, Bend adopted their mobile home relocation ordinance patterned after Wilsonville. It was appealed to LUBA. LUBA determined it did not have jurisdiction as a land use ordinance and referred the jurisdiction back to the circuit court. We suggested in earlier testimony in before the House committee that if this committee or the House committee wanted to make its intent clear, it could simply amend to state that this was not a land use regulation, much the way the legislation does for the assistance development charges. You may want to place it in a different location than it's currently placed in order to do that.
And could you tell us who you are for the record?
I'm Mike Koloff, city attorney for Wilsonville. The other issue that you may not be aware of is that in adopting our ordinance and Wilsonville's ordinance, we provided a due process relief hearing because we looked at this as both an investment balancing by the park owner and also investment balancing by the mobile home owners. And most of the cases that have supported this type of legislation have looked indeed at the investment issues involved for the mobile home owners. The asset value of the mobile home is generally there because it's being able to be sold in place. Upon closure, that investment value is obviously lost. The home cannot be sold in place, and the vast majority of homeowners cannot afford to move their home. Even those that can afford to move have limited options because there are fewer and fewer parks, and many do not take the older mobile homes. Against this, you have the park owner, basically we look at profit from land appreciation, but there may be other reasons to close, such as a catastrophe or death wherein the values may not support the statutory relocation costs. And as Mayor Lehan said, in the different communities around the area, there are different values. And so we developed a due process hearing in which there could be a request by the park owner to do a better balancing given particular circumstances with a right of appeal by writ of review.
Mr. Cole, I'm going to stop right there because clearly what you are indicating, as a few others have, that there are some other suggestions that might make this better, and we're not going to solve those in the last 30 minutes that we have before Senate bills in this committee. I did have one question, though. Because you did have an ordinance, and I appreciate the efforts the city of Wilson has done to try and protect people, but that has been that's being adjudicated now. It's been overturned, at least of the initial finding. Is that correct? And now you're appealing that decision.
There are 16 claims. We won on 14, lost on 2, and we're appealing those 2. And we're very confident that we'll have it overturned on appeal.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you both. This is where we are, folks. I have a few other people to testify. If you have written testimony, please submit it. For those of you who just came down and may have testified on the House bill, both the House and Senate are concluding all action on bills in their original houses, which means all Senate bills today as of 3 o'clock have to either move on or not. And that's the same thing with the bills in the House. Clearly, the testimony indicated here that there's more work to be done, and we're not going to solve that in 30 minutes. Fortunately, the Senate Finance Committee does not have the same restriction, and they have another month to be able to still work on these bills. And since there are clearly some issues, I think the best thing to do would be to move this bill on to Senator Deckert, who, as you can tell by listening to me, has the same cold I do, and so I excused him today, and Senator Starr is on that committee, and we'll be able to continue this discussion on Senate Bill 17. So with that, I think what I'll do is close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 17.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'll move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 17.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 17. Any discussion?
Just to concur your comments, clearly this we need to move the bill in order to keep it alive. The Dash 3 amendments are the base vehicle that I think needs to be the base from which we work in the Senate Finance Committee. So in the effort to move the process along, let's move the bill.
Okay. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 17 as amended to the Committee on Finance and Revenue.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 17 as amended to the Committee on Finance and Revenue. Any further discussion? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a really tough vote for a lot of us, especially those of us who are advocates for local control, and I also am obviously concerned about the issues of transferring some of the funding of this to local governments. We've made a number of policy decisions here at the state level in land use regulation area that has created this crisis with mobile home parks. And for those in the audience who are out there, what Mr. Landingham mentioned is there are some bills out there to provide some land use opportunities for mobile home parks. And these are statewide decisions that we've made. And I think that we need to recognize that when we make state decisions, they have ramifications, and this is one that's showing up a number of years later, but it is a real result of our vote. So anyway, I'm willing to vote this on to the Revenue Committee, but I just would urge folks to make sure that they look at the impacts of our land use laws on some of the most vulnerable in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bona, Senator.
I will be a no on this vote, just because I feel that that there's been a whole lot more work done on the bill coming through the House. If the changes are made in the Revenue Committee that then are to my liking and it comes to the floor, I will be a yes, but I will be a no at this point.
Okay, thank you, Senator. I think what's really important here is that folks have been working a long time, and a lot of you in the audience are among those, and trying to find relief for the residents of mobile home parks or manufactured parks, try to find some fairness to the system. The coalition, which has done yeoman's work over the last number of years in trying to bring people together, I applaud for all their efforts. Clearly, as you look at where we're going, you look at the status quo or you look at making changes, the status quo is unacceptable. Right now there's nothing, absolutely nothing in law, and there's nothing that's going to prevent closures. There's nothing that's going to pay anybody if they do close. And so I do think it's imperative that we continue to try and hammer out a statewide solution so if these parks close, that the residents actually will have some compensation out of that and have some protection. So I think we need to keep working on it, and hopefully, in Senator Deckert's committee, that discussion can continue. Any other comments? Mark Senator Monis Anderson as an objection. Any others? All right. So order what's on its way to the Committee on Finance and Revenue.
Okay,
and Mark Deckert as excused. Okay. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 789. Colleagues, this is the Share the Road license plate that Senator Przonski brought to us. I believe there's a Dash 1 amendment.
Are we in a work session?
Yes.
Do you want a motion?
Yes, on the Dash 1.
I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 789.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendment on Senate Bill 789. Any discussion? The objection. So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 789 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 789 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? The objection. So ordered. We'll ask Senator Przonski to carry that bill.
And Deckard is excused.
And Deckard's excused. Now we're going to open up a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 33 and ask Mr. Steve Clark to come forward. So I want to set to testify today on SJR 33. And again, colleagues, we were looking at the amendment to Senate Joint Resolution 33, which would change the kicker formula and ask the electorate if they would dedicate the difference to transportation infrastructure. Welcome, Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Clark. I'm president of the Portland Tribune and Community Newspapers and co-chair of the Oregon Business Plan Initiative on Transportation. I thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today and on this offer comments on the proposed legislation to provide increased funding for Oregon's transportation system by using a portion of the state's personal income tax kicker. First, let me applaud you for your continued leadership in this effort. As you well know, members of the Oregon Business Plan Steering Committee and the Transportation Initiative Steering Committee believe that transportation funding is a serious matter deserving consideration and action this session. Frankly, I personally give up my kicker to this matter. I've worked for 20 years in this, and I would personally do this. However, the Steering Committee of the Oregon Business Plan and a growing group of business, public, and highway user groups continue to pursue our plan, which is a $300 to $350 million transportation funding proposal that relies on the user pay system of the gas tax, vehicle registration fees, and vehicle title fees, and to work with the Oregon legislature in the interim to determine the future of transportation funding on a long-term basis. This effort, as you may know, is represented by a number of business associations, community organizations, governmental institutions, chambers of commerce throughout the state. It's taken us much longer than we would like, but it's taken us about 3.5 months to bring these people together in an organized, unified voice. And in the time that we've had available, quite frankly, we're not able to speak for these groups, but we do not believe that they would support this effort at this time. While we do strongly support transportation funding, determining if and where to invest even a portion of the personal income tax kicker is a serious matter that affects the state general fund and many of the programs that the Oregon Business Plan has priorities for. We are not ready to take a position in support of this resolution at this time, but as I said, we remain strongly in support of transportation funding from a user fee system, a dedicated source such as the gas tax. At the same time, we are committed both personally and as a group to work with your committee and you individually to work through in legislative compromise an ability to approve an increased transportation funding package by the 2007 Oregon Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. A couple of questions. This proposal came forward primarily as a result of some of the discussions we've had collectively that while looking at building a consensus and having the public be engaged in what they're buying would take some time, and to do that looking at a 2009 trigger to fund after this discussion and these projects, what we're buying were articulated. I think the committee made it very clear that we're looking at providing that type of opportunity for members to weigh in on, as you have articulated, in terms of an ongoing fund. But we also heard very convincingly that we had to do something at the moment, and that's where this originated, for the fact of taxes that have already been paid, already in the Treasury, already able to be utilized for that, and a sense of immediacy that it would seem to be a reasonable way to consider using revenues that have already been paid and expensed rather than giving it back and then asking to pay it back again. So that's basically the response for that. And I was just kind of curious as to your thoughts on that, because I mean, part of the cost of congestion study that was done in the Portland area was to articulate that the cost that was bearing on all of us, on our economies and our businesses, that as part of the discussion I think we need to have in transportation, which is part of Senate Bill 566 we passed last week, is an understanding that transportation, we are all transportation users. I'm kind of changing that paradigm of how we look at that in terms of who is responsible. And the reality is we're all responsible because we all either benefit or we lose when we don't have a sound transportation system. Mm-hmm.
Senator, I appreciate each of your comments and the effort to raise immediate funding. This issue and the kicker is of such immense scope that our group, which has been dedicated and working countless hours a week, if not a day, doesn't have the capacity to turn around a decision on this without opening question of many other matters. Yesterday, you may have seen in another newspaper that I published a rather serious article on the evaluation of what Oregon is investing in its state system of higher education and community colleges compared with the state of Washington. You raise an important question. How do we do this and how do we do it immediately? Those same kinds of questions, I think, could be posed to a number of other activities that the State General Fund should finance. Higher education, community college, human resource services that are physical services, not staff. It's just beyond our scope at this point by 3 o'clock to provide the response that you would like, but it is not without courtesy and respect that we would want to work with you to continue efforts and to find the right solution for this legislative session.
Well, let me go back a little bit, Mr. Clark, to your point about the user fees in terms of the old 07 session, in addition to the user fee that we're already discussing. And again, as I have mentioned, no guarantee it will muster votes, which is to increase license plate fee, registration fees. Can you update us at all on your discussions with leaderships in the House on your plan? Because I have not been able to see... have not received any positive feedback at all as to moving forward. And as you know, well, the Senate can start this because it's a referral to the people. And your plan has to start in the House, and I'd be very curious as to where we are with that that discussion from your business members.
Thank you, Senator. We'll be testifying today before the House Transportation Committee on two bills that provide for an increase in the gasoline tax and vehicle registration fees, with the hope that those would be referred to the House Revenue Committee for work. We continue to work with individual legislators, members of both caucuses, and the business community and the community as a whole to build support for what I believe you've asked for and other legislators have asked for, the ability to go home with a package that's doable. And we continue to work daily to achieve that level of support. What I would offer is simply that we will not give up in that effort until the legislature adjourns, and have a belief that folks like yourselves who come here to do good things will continue to work with us until the session ends, and that I understand and I'm aware of your point that this comes late, that you would have liked to have seen it last fall. But we want to do what Washington did, which was continue to work the legislature until its adjournment, and in fact pass the legislation, as I understand, in the last 30 days. So we're dogged. We're hopefully a partner with you and respectful of your points of view, but we want to persist in this effort and not turn everything inside out while we yet do not have that requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Questions for Mr. Clark?
Questions.
Senator Bonnie Sanderson, then Senator George.
I was, and I don't remember which newspaper I read this in, but there was a poll, and it was talking about taxes. And when you mentioned gas tax, far more people, over 80%, were against having the gas tax raised compared to any other tax that was put forward. Has the business group talked about this? Have they done some polling?
The most recent polling that we have available, that we have not commissioned, is polling done for both the Portland metropolitan area 2.5 years ago, as part of a similar effort on a regional basis to raise transportation funding. And the polling in the Portland area came back to say that folks would support increased fees or gas taxes if, in fact, it was a broad-based investment and that outcomes could be transparent. Most recently, as part of the four or five county area in the Portland area related to the Columbia River crossing the bridge, the response came back that congestion or the need to improve our road system was tied with education funding and education quality as the primary concerns. Senators, you well know what Oregonians or voters want, what they'll pay for is this fine line, and that's why we're working so doggedly to try and build both education, understanding, and commitment. And we think one of our obligations isn't just to work with you folks, and we appreciate that opportunity, but to educate all of Oregon. And so while we're working here in this session, we continue to work outside, and polling may be part of that evaluation over the next several weeks.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator George.
Thank you. Following up on what Senator Moss Anderson said, I guess my request to the panel last week was that I actually think the gas tax is a very, very difficult thing for this legislature to vote for simply because of the fact that gas prices are up and what we've seen so far is gas taxes. So I'd ask that you go back to the group and ask for a broad authority on all kinds of different revenue sources, whether that be something like SGR 13 or a corporate income tax or whatever else dedicated to transportation infrastructure. It'd be nice if your organization had the coalitions had the ability to come in and say everything's on the table. Mm-hmm. That'd make it a lot easier. I don't know if that's something you guys could get kind of authority for right off. That'd be helpful.
Well, Senator, we'll continue to explore all reasonable possibilities. I just knew we had a deadline to respond to this committee, and this is what I was able to say today, given the time to bring together really 15 to 20 groups and their boards was a schedule that, frankly, we could not meet. But we will continue to work to explore all possibilities. We do, frankly, philosophically believe in the user fees, and I know income taxes is one form of a user fee.
The other request I'd make of you, if we could, is that there's another side. There's the revenue side, but then there's also the expenditure side. And I brought up two issues during this legislative session, during this committee. One happens to be with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the expense that they make the Department of Transportation go through on all kinds of bridges rather than culverts and a number of that regulatory process. And then when you compare, Senator Whitsitt has some research that shows that our prevailing wage is much higher than neighboring states' prevailing wages like Idaho and Utah. And I'd ask that your coalitions also be willing to take a look at the expenditure side and how we reform government. Because I will tell you this, if the public doesn't view that we're spending their money well, they won't vote to give us more money. And those are two big cost tickets that I think that I don't want to, I'm not saying we get rid of prevailing wage, I just think prevailing wage needs to be comparable to other states that have a prevailing wage like ours. I don't know if that's something your coalitions can also seek, if they can be advocates for that kind of reform.
We'll do research into prevailing wage in comparable states as well as the Fish and Wildlife Matter. We very much agree with your philosophy that the citizens deserve to get what they pay for, and they want to do it efficiently and effectively. I think Senator Starr would tell you that's been a baseline philosophy of my involvement in transportation funding in our county for the last 15 to 18 years. So I agree with your philosophy.
Super. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you. You testified on a couple of House bills and House transportation. Was that today?
They will be meeting today, Senator.
So you are going to testify?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So there's potential those bills could move to House revenue and stay alive.
It's a possibility. We hope that that will occur, and that there will be a conversation within that committee and to further this effort.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll close the work session on Senate Joint Resolution 33. Obviously, we're not going to be moving that, so it'll go off into the horizon. And we are now done with Senate bills. We are adjourned.